Thanks, Letitia. So Nathan set the framework talking about soils. John's talked to you about models. Now I'm going to tell you what's been we've been observing that happens in the plant and in the field. So take a moment here to thank my co-author, Tim Smith at CropSmith in Illinois, who I collaborate with, and another person which is not listed here is Betsy Bauer at Ceres Solutions in Eastern Indiana. She's been a wealth of information for us for help collecting samples. So let's start here at the beginning, and that is we take a look here at what we know about plant analysis in terms of background. And so we have this diagram that was developed by Brown back in the early 70s, and it basically shows that as we have corn yield on the vertical axis on the left, and we have nutrient concentration over there on the right, and we have nutrient supply across the bottom there, we have this sigmoidal curve with an optimum there in that luxury consumption zone. And then as we cross up, going from a deficient situation, we cross into that luxury consumption zone, and even though after that we're losing yield, the nutrient concentration continues to increase. Now, the real focus of agronomy has been focusing on finding the deficient and the hidden hunger. In the early days, it was easy to find these deficient sites. They were blatantly obvious to the human eye. But most of the things that we experience today are in that hidden hunger issue, where we don't physically see it with our eye. It's out of sight. It's out of mind. Now, Ceres Solutions has an aggressive tissue sampling program in their agronomy unit. And Betsy Bauer there in the upper left, she's been coordinating this now since 2009. And in 2010, she started working really in great detail with growers in western Indiana, looking at growth stages for V5, V6, out to VT, even some post-R2 and R3 stages. And she's doing very small sampling blocks and going back out there, sampling 40 plants and collecting data. And this is actually quite an impressive, a massive data, because in 2010, she started off doing 400 locations. She went up to 800 in 2011. So it's in a massive database, and she's been willing to share that with me. And we have to realize these are different fields that change, vary in soil type, corn hybrid, population. Excuse me. We'll come back. Vary in soil type, corn hybrid, population, fertility, previous crop. So about any possible variable you can imagine that exists out there in the landscape across a multi-county area exists in her database. And we started working with her in 2010 on this, and we've continued that up, and we actually have 6 years of data so far. Tim Smith is located over in eastern Illinois, and he's been collaborating with some work in Illinois. So this is Betsy's data from back in 2010 through 2012, and we have the nutrient concentration, or the nutrient listed on the left, and we have the deficiency threshold based on Purdue recommendations, and we have the percent of samples that were deficient in each one of those categories for those first 3 years. Now, if you'll notice, 2010, 2011, nitrogen's about 5%, and then it goes wacko in 2012. What happened in 2012 in Indiana and Illinois? Does anybody in the audience remember? Drought. Tremendous drought. Cases where that precipitation was off by more than 50% in a large part of this particular area. You look at phosphorus, it's 1% the first 2 years, 20% in the drought year. So obviously the drought had tremendous leverage on changing what our numbers are. But look at potassium, 29% in 2010, 15% in 2011. In that drought year, it's the single biggest thing in terms of gross deficiencies out there. Drought, we have restricted water uptake, we have restricted growth. Potassium really manifests itself in that drought year. And you see what happens, look at magnesium. It's 21%, it's 6%, and in 2012, when potassium went up, magnesium went down. Now, keep in mind, that is going to be a reoccurring phenomenon. And they have the other analytes that are of interest. Well, now I've added 13, 14, and 15. Now, if you'll notice, with the exception of 2012, nitrogen's floating around about 10 or 15%. Potassium, with the exception of 2012, is hovering around in the 20% area, except for 2015. What happened in 2015 in the Indiana market during that prime growth stages of May and June? John?
Rain.
Rain. So, in the wet year, there's not near as much potassium deficiency, and look at magnesium deficiencies. They explode off the scale. There's a competition synergistic effect between those two ions that happen between wet years and dry years. Also note, at 2015, what happened to nitrogen? Tremendous deficits, tremendous deficiencies. The plants weren't growing fast. They didn't have that robust growth, i.e. probably didn't have a big potassium demand. Because after nitrogen, the next biggest demand for a nutrient is potassium. So, well, where does that lead us? This is data for, we've graphed her data for 2011 and 2012 for potassium. So in green is 2011. 2012 is in yellow, the drought. Very interesting distributions. Notice they have almost exactly the silhouette peaks, but one shifts a half a percent to the right. So in the drought year, when we have all this potassium deficiency, it shifts back to the left. Now that's 851 sites that she sampled. If I throw up magnesium, opposite. Potassium goes down, magnesium goes up. One for one exchange, almost ideally. And notice we have both doublets for the same 2 years. So there's obviously some kind of swapping mechanism going on in this database relative to Mag and K. So I like to dig into data. I like to start to peel it apart. And one of the things we did, we took her data set and we said, well, obviously in this big data set, there's probably no difference between a 2% K value and a 2.05. Because in the laboratory analysis business, there's an uncertainty associated with every measurement. So we sliced the data up into 0.1% windows. And here I have leaf K on the x-axis and leaf mag on the vertical. And what you'll notice in this data set, as soon as I go down below 2% K, the magnesium takes off like a rocket. And if I look at last, if I sort that database based on leaf mag, on leaf K on the vertical, there's a subtle change there, but it's pretty subtle. It says that if I sort the database on K alone, it shows a tremendous effect on mag with an R-square of 0.98. If I look at the opposite, it's still a good R-square, but it's much less subtle. What this is saying is that as that plant goes into K deficiency, it's taking up more mag, but it really becomes critical below 2%. And if you look at her sample sets across all years, when we're talking with K levels of 1.5 and 1.4, severe drought or severe deficiencies in K, the thing that we see is mag levels going to 0.4, 0.5, in fact, some samples as high as 0.9 in terms of the amount of magnesium taken up. Now, remember, this is a data set. It's got different fields, hybrids, populations, all kinds of compounding factors in the background. Yet we can sort this out. So that leads me down the road to nutrient ratios. And Elwali at University of Georgia back in the 80s did a detailed study looking at nutrient ratios. They were strictly looking at the results of trying to go down the road of DRIS. And he came up with these threshold values here, with the mean, which he considered the adequate range for each one of these ratios, and the standard deviations. And his data set says that when corn ear leaf mag ratios are greater than 0.15, he would classify those sites as K deficient. So how does those stack up compared to what Betsy's data is? Well, unfortunately with Betsy's data, we do not have yield. We can't tell what the final outcome is on this. But so happens that the last 4 years, actually 5 years, I've been doing a case study across the grain belt. And we've accumulated 76 site years of data looking at K response. But we happen to have check plots. In fact, our check plots are replicated 8 times. So this is our 2014 data. We had 16 sites across 4 states. And we sorted the data out by mag to K ratio into a high population with high values and one with low. And so you see the site names, the mag to K ratio, and an end to mag ratio, and I'll get to that in a minute, and then the yield. And what we see is that the 5 lowest sites had an average yield of 146 bushels to the acre. I'm sorry, the high,
the five highest magna K ratios had an average yield of 146 bushel the acre, and they had an average magna K ratio of 0.31. Now remember El Wali? It was 0.15 was his threshold value. We're 2x that. If we look at our low magna K ratios, we have an average yield of a 212 bushel the acre. Now these are multiple sites across four states. And we have a magna K ratio of 0.15, which is right in the dead center of his ideal range. Also notice the end of mag is 7.4 versus 12. And I'll get to that in a minute. But the bottom line, if you look at these two clusters, there's a 66 bushel acre difference. So Bob likes to get in doing more analysis. I think I'm on the road to something here. This is Kate Nelson's analysis for that same data. Leaf K on the x-axis, end to mag ratio on the vertical. Notice the complete separation here between leaf K and end to mag ratio. We go down in K deficiency and the end to mag ratio collapses on us. If we look across these 4 years and we just contrast these types of clusters, in 2011 there was a 37 bushel difference, 2012 a 42, 13 a 52, 14 a 41. What we're seeing on tissue analysis is about an average difference when we get into these rapidly different decay deficiency situations of about 40 to 50 bushels the acre. Now, so I explored this a little farther because you may have K deficiency, but if you don't have your nitrogen right, you really don't know what's the problem. So this is the same 2014 data, and we have taken and put on the x-axis, we have ear leaf nitrogen, and on the vertical we have yield of these 16 locations. Now I've sorted this database on end to mag ratios greater than 10 and end mag ratios less than 10. And just for the moment, focus on ones higher than 10. Across all these locations, we have an R-square with ear leaf N and grain yield of 0.83. 83% of the variability in yield across those locations was explained by nitrogen. But if we look at those sites that had the low end of mag ratio, 68% was explained by that. All those sites happen to be K deficient, at least in terms of our leaf analysis. It goes back and supports this premise. This is a big limiting factor. We see it in the tissue data. I wish we could find it in our soil test data. I can show you soil test data for these sites. It's confounding at best. So, in conclusions, we look at growth stage VTR1 leaf being a really good indicator, and that the data that El Wali actually developed back in the mid-80s is actually pretty well supportive today, despite the fact we've had variety changes, population changes, a lot of introduction of new things in agriculture. That this mag K and end to mag ratio, I think, are very good indicators of having yield limiting situations. And I know Letitia's standing here to my side, so I'll come up with this. You know, Liebig's barrel, I think, is very appropriate in that we always know nitrogen's the most limiting. It's the thing that we can put out there and we see a rapid visual response. But I contend that phosphorus does not belong in that lower paddle. That's where potassium belongs relative to grain, corn, maize in the Midwest, because nitrogen is the largest accumulated nutrient and potassium is right behind it. We're still working on this. We've had some more work this current year. We're really trying to focus on the fact that when we get into high yield environments, high populations, aggressive nitrogen management is when we're seeing the highest incidences of K deficiencies. So, thank you.